This episode is sponsored by Tunbridge Accountants. Are you a creative entrepreneur looking for financial support? Do you need clarity around your numbers or help with decisions related to your business finances? Do you even know what all the numbers mean? Before I worked with Tunbridge Accountants, I definitely didn't. Wendy and Lawton are not just accountants, they're your partners in navigating the complexities of business finance. They make VAT, corporation tax, cash flow management, all of this really simple, guiding you through all the decisions you need to make, whether that's a company purchase, setting up a new business, whether to register as a business. Wendy and Lawton can give you really honest, practical advice on everything. And by letting them take care of your business finances, it then frees you up to focus on what you do best, creating and selling your products. So thank you again to Tunbridge Accountants for sponsoring this podcast.
Welcome to the Bring Your Product Ideas to Life podcast. Practical advice and inspiration to help you create and sell your own physical products. Here's your host, Vicky Weinberg.
Hello. So today I'm talking to Dahlia Hawley from Dahlia Botanique. So Dahlia sells her own botanical beauty products. So she formulates all of her and makes all of her products herself. And we had a really great conversation about botanicals and what they are. Obviously, I didn't know. I'm not sure if you know, but you will know after this episode. And we also talked a lot about the compliance side of creating beauty products and the testing and sort of everything that goes into that and how to know that products are safe. And she also gave some really useful advice to consumers as well. So if you are purchasing your own beauty products, and particularly if they're handmade, what to look out for to know that they will be safe for you. So I thought that was a really interesting insight, as well as everything else that Dahlia shared. So I'm going to stop talking and introduce you now to Dahlia. So hi, thank you so much for being here.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Shall we start with you please giving an introduction to yourself, your business, and what you sell?
Yeah, so I'm Dahlia from Dahlia Botanique, and I sell skincare, and a lot of my products are aimed for people who like spending a lot of time outdoors, who love gardening and want a sort of minimal skincare routine that's still going to really look after their skin, but not at a really high price point.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you. Well, that's a really good succinct like description of your products. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
So Dahlia, what inspired you to create your skincare range? Take us right back to the beginning.
Yeah, so I used to make sort of balms and the things like that for friends and family years and years ago when I was a kid. And I had a massage business, not as a kid, as an adult. And through there I started making my own massage oil blends, and I kind of started to think, oh, you know, I quite like to sort of look in a bit more into making my own skincare. And I don't know if you could call it luck, but lockdown happened. And then one side of me, I lost the massage work, obviously we weren't working, but then I suddenly had all this time to set up my skincare business. I moved in with my other half, we had a garden, I redid the garden, and then all the inspiration for all the botanicals that we grow, suddenly I was like, oh, we can use a lot of these in skincare. I started doing a skincare course with the Soap School in Huddersfield, and then Formula Botanica, an online skincare school. And then, yeah, it just started to develop from there, really. I started making my products, and yeah, it just really took off. So that was kind of the whole sort of background of it.
That's amazing. And so had it been at the back of your mind that this was something you would like to do?
Yeah. Yes, it had. Yeah, yeah. Because I was always thinking, as I was running the massage side of things, I was looking for a bit more of a passive income, say if I couldn't work or whatever reason. And so the massage oils, you know, I was making my own massage oils and working with an aromatherapist to make some sort of other products. And then, yeah, just from there, it's kind of like started developing even more. And then it's just, it was almost like a natural kind of end to the massage and beginning to the skincare. So it sort of blended in quite well together.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, you don't want to say that lockdown was lucky, and I completely know what you mean here, but I guess the timing, I guess, was quite kind of fortuitous, because I guess you had the time to actually work on this. Whereas when you have a day job and you're just, you know, working, it's very hard, isn't it, to kind of carve out the time to do anything else.
Yeah, definitely.
So that does sound good. And you mentioned the garden, and you mentioned sort of growing things. So should we talk a little bit about botanicals? Because I don't know much about botanicals, but I do know they feature in your products. So can you just explain what they are and why they're good for us?
Yeah, so I use, so I noticed that a lot of the wildflowers that we could grow, and it was just kind of, it sort of married at the same time that I was doing my skincare courses. So then I was like, oh, there's these oils that we use that are, you know, that are from flowers, so botanicals, flowers that we grow in the UK. You know, we've got like borage, for example, is really good. You know, that's a really nice dry oil. And then you've got sort of Lunaria, which is, I'm trying to describe it, obviously. It's kind of like a pink flower, and they're called, I can't remember the name of them. When they're dry, they're kind of like a clear sort of circle, and you can see inside like a moon shape, and you can see the seeds inside. You'll know it when you saw it, when you see it, but it's really distinctive. And they grow wild everywhere. And so I had that, and then poppy as well. So suddenly I was like, oh, you know, I was finding sort of poppy seed oil in some of the literature that I was reading, and I was like, oh, okay, you know, that grows locally as well. Like, actually, I'm growing it in my garden. Evening primrose as well, and calendula. And I think calendula, evening primrose, they're more those kind of historic botanicals that we know about. I know my grandma used to, you know, make a calendula oil and things like that at home, and lavender and rosemary as well. You know, they're all growing, you know, I was growing all of those in my garden as well. And so I was like, yeah, of course, you know, there's lavender essential oil, rosemary essential oil, and all those, you know, they all harbour really, really powerful properties as well. So yeah, and obviously I remember my grandma used to make me lavender hair rinses as well, just from dried lavender soaked in water. I can't remember whether it actually worked or not, but you know, it was something that we always did. So yeah, there is actually, there's a lot that we can get from some of these botanicals, those flowers.
Oh, thank you for explaining that, because I wasn't entirely, sounds really silly, doesn't it, but you realize you don't know what you don't know. This might also be a really silly question, because I don't know how big your garden is, but are you sort of, I don't know if making is the right word, but do any of these elements come from your garden?
Sadly not. I would love to, but you have to use cosmetic grade ones. So believe it or not, you know, they might not look like there's any little insects or anything on there, but there is. So yeah, you usually have to buy them from a sort of company that have, I don't know exactly how they do it, but they almost call it clean it. So, you know, you haven't got like bugs in it or anything like that. So I do have to go, and to get it cosmetically assessed, it has to come from a cosmetic grade company, which means they kind of make sure that, you know, it's all properly cleaned and safe to use for the consumer as well. So, but they do use, the companies I do use sort of UK grown botanicals as well, and I think there's three suppliers that grow their own, have their own farms, so they grow it and they process it all on site and stuff, which is brilliant. So yeah, I'd love to use my own, but I have to go through quite a vigorous process of testing to get it allowed in.
That makes sense. I think what I was thinking of, it sounds like a silly question, but I think I was thinking back to, you know, you were talking about your grandma, and I think that perhaps if you were doing it for personal use, it's absolutely fine, isn't it? You can take what you want, but it does make sense that if you're selling it, and it would need to be of a certain grade, and presumably you have to go through testing and things like that as well.
Yeah, definitely. But if you've got some of those at home, there's no reason why. I've got my Instagram, I posted a video on how to make your own lavender room bags. You know, I've infused rosemary oil and things like that before, all at home for personal use. So dried lavender, chamomile as well. Can't believe I forgot that. It's like the most popular herb. Chamomile as well. I've dried that and used that as well. So for personal use, yeah, absolutely fine to use the product. So.
Well, that's good to know. Yeah, and hopefully you'll inspire people as well to sort of see what's in their garden and how they could use it.
Definitely. Yeah.
So it sounds like, so once you come out, you had a bit of space to sort of think about your skincare range, and then you mentioned the courses that you were doing. So how did you go from there to having products? What was the process of actually, I guess, is formulating formulating.
Yeah.
That sounds like
the
right
word.
That's
exactly the right word. Yeah.
So how did you go about with formulating your products and working out what ingredients they'd have? You can see I'm a little bit out of my depth with skincare.
So no, not at all. You're asking all the right questions. Yes, it is called formulating because you are putting something together. So it's a bit like a science experiment. So the way I started doing it, obviously I had all the course notes, and in the courses that I was doing, first of all, Soap School and then Formula Botanica, you have recipes that you can try and experiment with. They send you a list of all the ingredients, all the properties in, so you get everything kind of sent to you. And from there, you just start experimenting. You know, I was watching YouTube, I don't know if I can mention it, but someone called Humblebee and Me, American lady, and she formulates loads of products, puts it all on YouTube, she's brilliant. So you just start learning and reading and researching. And then it's trial and error. So I've gone through hundreds of different formulations. And really it's trial and error. And then sometimes you eventually come to a point where you're like, okay, well, I'm gonna take the bits out of this that work, and I'm gonna remove the bits out of this that don't work. And then you're using sort of willing friends and family as guinea pigs as well. And then they all give you, I've got some friends who are very good at giving me quite honest feedback. So they became some of my guinea pigs. And yeah, and just from there, it's just like a trial and error. And eventually you find the one that works and the one that you like the most. So it's quite a long process.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds really scientific, because I guess you're having to keep, you know, meticulous notes on how much of this you've used and how much of that. And there are so many elements as well, aren't there, with skincare, because it's how it feels, like the texture and the benefit, what it does and how it smells. Yeah. Like, there's so many things involved.
Definitely. And you calculate it all in percentages, so then you can upscale or downscale how much you make. But yeah, there's lots of things you have to go through. So obviously testing, and then God, I can't remember the name basically stability testing. So I'd put it in like different rooms around the house or different temperatures. You know, does it change, does it solidify, do the oils change, the smell change, all those kind of things. You know, like, right, okay, how is it after like 3 months? You know, does it still smell and feel the same, has it changed? So, you know, on a hot summer's day, I know that my body butters have no chance in surviving, but my oils are all right. So yeah, it was just one of those things. You just have to kind of do all these stability tests as well. So yeah.
Wow, I didn't even think about that, because you're right. I mean, we've just come through a really hot summer, haven't we? So I guess in a way that's a good chance to test out how things react.
Totally.
But that's a lot to think about, because, you know, presumably if you'd sort of formulated all your products in winter, it could be very easy to get around to the summer and then find out everything melts or changes consistency or really involved.
I had this summer I wasn't sending body butters out to people. I was just like, no, because I can't control the temperature once it's left. So on the labels they would say, you know, store somewhere cool and dark, keep out of direct sunlight. But then, you know, when we had post strikes and things like that, I don't know how long they're being left in a hot van or a hot building, or, you know, it's just not worth the risk. sometimes I do tell people not to put it somewhere like hot, and sometimes, I've had people leave it on the windowsill and things like that as well, and I'm like, no. So yeah, you do have to go through all these testing, and you realise, you know, what kind of temperatures it works in and what it doesn't work in. So yeah,
that's a lot to think about. And do you need to have any external testing done as well?
Yeah, so the way it works is, for all cosmetics to be legally compliant, you go to a cosmetic chemist who is a cosmetic assessor. So they're specifically trained in being able to assess your recipes. You don't need to send samples in. You send your recipe in, and they're usually pretty good. You know, they're really, really good at kind of telling you what you need to send in. You send like you know, what your label look like, you send your product description in, and how the instructions for how to use it and all the ingredients and the percentages or the grams of amount you have in. And then they will kind of look at that and say, actually you need to remove this, or you need to change this, or this needs to be, especially with essential oils, because they are quite toxic. You know, we think about them as being quite healing and stuff, but actually they are quite toxic in high doses. So they'll often tell you to change, you know, that as well. And they're the ones that sign it off. So if anything was to happen, for this, you know, they are kind of legally responsible for your product in a way as well. So yeah, you have to go through that. With my body butters, I use I infuse chamomile and calendula in apricot kernel oil, and I have to send samples off to a lab to get tested, just to make sure that there's no contamination or anything like that. But it's easy to do. It sounds like it's a lot, but it is actually, you know, it is quite easy to do. And obviously peace of mind that you're legally compliant as well is also worth the money too, I think. So yeah.
Well, absolutely, yeah. Because it sounds like, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking there's more and more obviously you have to be aware of and think about. It must be really reassuring actually to have someone external who said, yes, you're doing all the right things.
Yeah. And they're really good. Like if something's not, you know, if for instance they think ingredients not going to work, or you've got too much of something, they will kind of tell you to change it. So yes, and they send you all the reports and everything as well. So yeah. You'd be surprised how many people don't get testing though. I have been to craft markets and seen products, and I kind of just have to like turn away now, because it is a bit scary if sometimes people just don't do that process, which is bad.
It is. And so, is there a way, and maybe there isn't, but is there a way as a consumer of knowing whether someone has done the testing or not, do you know?
There isn't really that much you can check. It's difficult because don't quote me on this, but there was something about that you couldn't say that your products were cosmetically assessed for some reason or another. I can't remember why, but I can always get back to you with that. But what kind of stands out for me is I look at label, I'll look at kind of what safety information they put in there. I've seen people selling face mists and not putting preservatives in there. Water is a breeding ground for bacteria. So if you're selling like face mists or room mists or anything without preservatives in, that straight away is a red flag for me. And I will challenge someone on that as well. I have challenged people about that as well. So it's usually things like that. I have like a list of red flags that I can see things and how things are written. And I think, hang on a minute, has this person actually gone through the process? And sometimes it could be innocent. Sometimes someone just doesn't know they need to go through that process. But the information is widely available online, so you haven't really got an excuse, I think. Yeah,
that is really helpful, thank you. Because I was just thinking, as a consumer, you wouldn't necessarily know that somebody had to have that, but I think I'm definitely, from what you said, I'm definitely going to be looking at safety labels on products. I assume if there's no safety directions, that's probably a red flag, isn't it? There's nothing.
You can even tell someone's not put, you know, allergens on, or how to use, how to store listed ingredients properly with what's called the inky names, which is like the full kind of name of that ingredient. You know, there's little things like that that are just or anything with no preservatives in, but it's got water in. Yeah, there's little things that I kind of start thinking, actually, have they actually gone through testing? So yeah.
Okay, thank you. And I'm not asking, and you know, to try and call anyone out or scare anyone. No. It's just, I'm just genuinely interested, because I think for the interest of transparency, it's just good to know this kind of thing, isn't it? And I mean,
yeah,
it might hit people off buying it, it might not, but at least you're aware.
Definitely. And I think trading standards are, I did read a story about trading standards actually going to a market not that long ago and shutting a few places down. But you know, for people who are thinking about making cosmetics, the information is out there and people are happy to give that advice. And I've spoken to Trading Standards before about labelling, and they've been so helpful. You know, they're not people to be scared of, and they will send you all the correct information. And then you put that email to say, well, Trading Standards have given me this, this information about labelling. So you've got your backup, you know. So these people do want to help. So you can go out and get that information of how to be legally compliant as a cosmetic seller too.
That's really good advice, thank you. And yeah, it's good to know, because you can see that you may think, oh, trading standards are, you know, they're big and they're busy and they're not going to be approachable. Yeah. So it's really good that you've had that experience, because I think you're right. Generally, if you ask, someone is willing to help you, because, you know, everyone wants things done correctly and safely. So
yeah,
I think that's great advice, to just reach out if you're not sure, because it's much better than guessing or...
Yeah, definitely. Another thing as well, so I forgot to go on a bit of a rant about this, I'm quite passionate about it, but if people are making medical claims about their products, like if people say, oh, it cures eczema or anything like that, that's another red flag. If you're saying that it cures any kind of skin condition, it needs to be a medically certified product, which you can't really do easily. You know, you have to go through a lot of, you know, a lot of companies and certifications to get that. So again, if people say, oh, it cures this or it cures that, or, you know, of this skin condition, and I'm just like, have you been medically certified to say that? Probably not. So yeah, there's lots and lots of stuff around labeling that's red flags for me.
Yeah, and I have heard of, and I've forgotten which the body is and isn't Trading Standards, but I have heard of people's websites being shut down because of those kinds of claims. And I know that, you know, it people are getting sort of stronger on it. So selling on Amazon, for example, they will not allow anybody to make any medical claims that can't be backed up. And even selling cosmetics, you do need to provide your safety data information and sort of prove that you've gone through the testing process, which is great. I'm not sure if all marketplaces are the same. I don't know if Etsy's the same, for example, but I do know Amazon definitely are getting quite tough on that, which it can be frustrating, because even if you have it all, I know that it's, you know, it feels like you've been asked to jump through hoops. But I do think it's good that someone's kind of vetting these products before they go onto a marketplace and buying them.
Yeah, and even stuff like labeling, you know, a lot of people put the products are organic, but they've not gone through certification to say that they're organic. So again, it's misleading, it's actually illegal. So and things like, you know, cruelty free, but we can't, you know, we're not allowed to test for animals in this country. So there's lots of things you've got to be really careful about with labeling. And if you're labeling something organic, but actually it's not been certified organic, then again, you need to know what you're putting on your labels and not put anything that's illegal on there.
That's good to know. And obviously you don't need to say how much, but are there costs involved in going through these testings, whether it's to certify your products are organic or to certify that they're safe? Are there costs involved?
Yeah, so it isn't the cheapest. You know, you're talking sort of in hundreds of pounds. But again, you know, if you want to develop cosmetics, you have to have the money for that. There are now coming up on the market, which I think is really good, especially if people are quite new to cosmetic making, is a lot of the cosmetic assessors will sell pre-certified blends and products. So you can actually buy the assessment and then they give you the recipe. And then sometimes you can have loads of different variations on there. You have to follow it all to a T, obviously. But, you know, you can buy that. You can buy the variations. That, you know, you can buy, say, like one face cream. It could be a hand cream. It could be a hand and foot cream. It could be a body lotion. And then you'll get like a choice of essential oils in that you can add in as well. And you can buy the base product and then add these oils in. And they'll do all different kinds of products like that, like face oils, beard oils, shampoo stuff, body care. And sometimes that can be kind of a more affordable avenue to go down. I mean, I've certainly considered it for other products. And that's a really good way to have all the safety data, have your own skincare range, but not have to pay, you know, a much higher price for your own formulations. So it's usually a good gateway in.
That really makes sense. And I guess it also saves you time as well, because the formulations, I presume, have been worked out for you. So you know that as long as you stick to the recipe, they'll work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or you can even buy like the base of something as well and then add your own stuff in. So,
yeah, that really makes sense, actually. That seems like a really good way of entering safely and, as you say, spending a bit less time as well.
Yeah, a bit less time, a bit less money.
That's really useful. Oh, also, and I'm sorry to ask so many questions on this, but we've gone down this path and I'm really interested now. If you're formulating yourself, does anyone ever come and check up on you, sort of where you're making them and how you're doing it? Because I know, for example, if you were to make food products at home, you would have your kitchen certified, and you know, I don't think it happens very often, but presumably someone can come along and check that everything's clean and everything else. Does something similar apply when you're formulating cosmetics?
Yeah, it can do. Yeah, so you need to have on your labels that if your address or your safety data is stored, so paperwork and everything like that. So that's on my labeling because it's my home address. If they had any kind of suspicions or they thought that anything, you know, there was something wrong with the products, there's absolutely no stopping training standards coming around and wanting to see all my paperwork. So obviously probably unannounced as well, so you need to make sure you've got it all to hand. So
oh, thank you. Yeah. I just hope you don't mind me asking. It's not that I
no, it's fine, it's good to know, 'cause I think then people who are listening who want to go into skincare formulation, you need to have this information, you know, you need to know these things. So
I think so. And not to obviously to scare anyone or put anyone off, but I think it's there's nothing worse than finding something out 6 months down the line, for example, where you think, oh, I wish I'd known that.
Definitely.
Because often we can find ourselves not doing things wrong, but perhaps not doing things we should be doing because we just don't know that we should be doing it. I really appreciate how much you're sharing, because this is
fine.
I think this is so useful, because it's you're being so transparent. I think anyone who is thinking about skincare and cosmetics is getting a really clear idea of what's involved, and that is really important.
Definitely. Oh, absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit, if you don't mind, about your actual ingredients for your products. So you mentioned that they're grown in the UK. Is that right? And was that part of your vision from the start that you wanted to source from UK suppliers?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Especially when, you know, I started gardening. I had quite a lot of time in my hands in lockdown, like many people. So I started transforming my other half garden. So I decided there and then, actually, you know, this would be a really nice kind of twist to add to it. There are a few brands that use UK botanicals as well, so I'm not the only one. It's not possible to get everything from the UK, but I get sort of stuff from UK suppliers. I had a lot of problems with Brexit, where a lot of my ingredients were cut off. So yeah, still recovering from that a little bit. So I mainly work, all my suppliers are within the UK, because it's just more cost effective now. Rather than trying to get it abroad, and thankfully they all stock everything here as well, which is a bit of a relief, but they will obviously have to import certain things like the shea butter, cocoa butter, you know, we can't produce that here. Certain oils as well that I use, you know, they can't be produced here because we don't have the weather, fortunately, for mandarins and bergamot and all the, you know, things like that, so they do have to be imported, but I go through UK suppliers for that. So, and then the UK grown botanicals, there's three of my suppliers that have their own farms, and they grow their own and process their own, or they use farms locally for them.
And was that an easy process, or was it quite hard to find what you needed in the UK? And because I'm always really fascinated by sourcing, because I know that suppliers are such a key part of sort of the journey, and often it can be really challenging to find exactly what it is you need.
Definitely. I spent ages looking. Within a kind of industry, and I don't know if you found this, you kind of get to know who the good suppliers are. And so, especially because I was doing courses, they had lists of suppliers too, which is, you know, they give you all the information, the list. So you're not starting from a completely blank Google looking for suppliers. And then just through looking through these suppliers, I found them. And then I was Googling. I can't remember now how I came across Lunaria. I'm sure I saw it in another product, or I was Googling like UK ingredients, UK grown kind of skincare, and I found Lunaria. And then I found the farm down south that grow it and process it. And then they, from there, I found that they have borage and white poppy. And then I found two of the other suppliers. We have the lavender, chamomile, and rosemary as well. So it kind of all sort of linked in eventually. But yeah, there's just a lot of Googling, basically. And I was just lucky because I did the courses, I got like loads of lists of suppliers as well, which helped. So I wasn't starting completely in the dark.
That's really useful. And I guess that's another benefit of doing the course as well, because also presumably there are people you could have asked if you got really stuck, because they'll know the industry. Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you have your own Facebook groups as well, especially the soap school. You know, that was what, 2 years ago. You know, I'm still in their Facebook group, I'm still in the Formula Botanica one. So yeah, there's always, you know, you can pop on and say, right, I'm really struggling to find this, can anyone help? And someone always pipes up, so, which is good.
That's really nice, isn't it? Because I feel that sometimes there can be a misconception that, you know, it's all, everyone's in competition, but I've actually found completely the opposite. And often if you ask somebody, I mean, some of the best sort of suppliers that I've found have just been by saying, does anybody know someone? And I think if people have someone that they're happy with and they work well with, usually they're 9 times out of 10, they're quite happy to just share that, because it benefits everyone.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And, you know, I've got those friends who are formulators, have their own skincare brand, but I don't see it as a competition, because there's enough for everyone and we're different markets as well. So, you know, I've got no problem with sharing suppliers and things like that. So, yeah, because we're completely different as brands and different audience. And like you say, there's enough skincare products for everyone. So, you know, it's not like it's something that's really niche and that, you know, people only buy from you and someone else sent competition. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the only exception to that is if someone is actually copycatting somebody else's brand. But I don't think that, well, in my experience, that doesn't seem to happen a lot.
No.
Is there any, out of interest though, can you protect your formulas if you wanted somebody to not make exactly what you were making? Can you do that? I know that, sorry, it's another question
I'm
prepared for.
I've got to think now.
It just suddenly struck me that there must be cases where actually with skincare and with lots of other things that there must be sort of people selling pretty much the same thing, but we as consumers just aren't aware of that because we don't know they're using the same or similar formulations. I assume maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know, actually. That's a good question. I'm sure I've come across this before and I can't remember what the answer is. I know you can trademark your brand name, but I don't know about formulation. I can't remember off the top of my head about formulations, because I remember when you were saying that, it just reminded me of how this high street shops now doing cosmetic dupes, aren't they? The most expensive, wasn't it? Aldi, I think, have got some really good. I'm seeing lots of people post about some of the Aldi skincare, of how it's exactly like you know, some of the famous brands.
Elizabeth Arden or something, isn't it? I've heard it compared to
And the Body Shop hemp as well. I found a Body Shop hemp cream, exactly the same ingredients, but it was Aldi. I was like, ooh, how did they do that?
What got me wondering, actually, because I'm quite a fan of the Aldi skincare range, because it's good quality and it's and it's, you know, a quarter of the price of some of the bigger brands. That did get me wondering. I mean, I'm assuming that if you're a massive, you know, if you're Nivea maybe, or whoever owns Nivea, maybe you can protect your, I don't know, maybe, but then I don't know who would police that. I know I'm going really off track now, but it did get me wondering, because there's no such thing as an original idea, is there, really?
No. Oh, absolutely not. You know, and I was, obviously, when I was researching my formulations, I was looking at brands that I like and thinking, oh yeah, you know, I really like their kind of, the whole brand, their ethos, their ingredients, you know, so you have to be careful that you don't go down that hole of like, I'm going to try and replicate what they're doing. But yeah, I don't know. I'm sure I've come across this before and I can't remember off the top of my head what the answer was for this. I know you can trademark your name, but I don't know about your recipes. So
perhaps it's something that's sort of reserved for the brands with a lot of money, because I can't imagine it's cheap.
Yeah, they have their own legal teams and yeah, definitely.
But it does make sense what you're just saying though about looking at other products that you like, because I suppose, I mean, whatever product you're creating, I always say to people, look at what you're competitors are doing, not to copy, but you know, if they've got a particular scent that you like, or you know, you wouldn't copy like for like, and hopefully you'd be looking to improve on what they were doing. But I think, you know, we do need some, we do need to get inspired from somewhere, and also just know what else is there as well. It's just good to know like where you fit and what makes you different. So absolutely nothing wrong with looking at it.
No, it's good. You should be and seeing what's out there and stuff and what people are doing. So yeah, definitely.
So let's move on a little bit, if that's okay, and talk about actually sort of when you started to sell your products. Because it sounds like this, you know, the formulation stage was really big, and then presumably you also have to work on labeling and packaging, and there's lots that goes into that. So when were you ready to start selling, and how did you do that?
So I think it took me about a year to go through the process, and I was already lucky that I was selling some of my massage products in a shop called Fabrication, which is a social enterprise of indie shop in Leeds and Wakefield, Leeds and York, oh my god. Leeds and York. I live in Wakefield. I'm in the shop in Wakefield. And so the owner of that, Dawn, said, you know, bring your products in. Obviously we were in lockdown, so everything had to go online, and then, you know, so it had to work like that. That was a bit strange. But they're on the shelves there now, and I moved to Wakefield. So I approached the art house in Wakefield, and they were, you know, they were really keen to have. So I approached kind of sort of more indie retail spaces, because I saw they were working with more sort of local businesses as well. So I knew they would probably be a good fit for my brand. And then I just knew of Etsy, and people were selling on Etsy. So I head down that avenue first, because it's quite easy set up. You don't need a website. You know, it's quite self-explanatory. And it's very popular as well. So lots of people know about it. And then I sort of went over to Shopify sort of later on, sort of earlier this year with my new range, and moved my whole brand over to Shopify.
Thank you. And how did you, so are you still on Etsy as well as Shopify now, or are you purely on Shopify?
Yeah, I've still got a shop on Etsy, just in case anything happens to Shopify. I get like a couple of hits on it, but not as much now that I've kind of moved over. So I still get a couple of hits on there, but I use it more as a backup, just in case.
Yeah, that makes sense. It definitely makes sense not to just have, you know, if it's relevant for you to be in two places, that totally makes sense. But it's always good to have sales on your own website, isn't it? Because then there's none of those fees and everything else that just eats into your margins.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, I'm open to Amazon as well, if it fits. So, you know, when I first met you, I was like, oh, I've never thought about Amazon. Could I sell on Amazon? So that is something that's been in the back of my mind, actually, since I found your company and your brand and everything.
Oh, we'll talk about that when we're not recording. But Amazon can be a good place for all kinds of products. And it definitely sounds like, well, like I said, we'll talk about it in more detail, but anyone else with a cosmetics brand, it definitely sounds like you have everything you need, because you've been through all the certifications and you can prove that your product is safe and it's been tested. Those are the kind of the key things that you need to have. And in terms of whether, you know, what the market's like and things like that, something different, but it definitely sounds like you have all of the components, which is really important, because if you don't, you can't, and that is the bottom line. You know, if you haven't had your products tested, you just can't do it.
It won't
get on there. So
it's not worth it, the cost you pay to get, because you know if someone sees you, because they have a skin reaction, that's going to be 5, 6, 8 million times more expensive than getting a cosmetic assessment for like £200.
So, absolutely. And I know I keep going back with all these compliance things, but I guess it's probably also worth having insurance, isn't it? I suppose if you sell something.
I've got like personal liability, also because I do markets as well, coming up to Christmas, so you need insurance for that. And again, there's some really good sort of craft insurers out there as well that a lot of people in the craft industry use. And again, you know, for the year, it's not that much, so it's worth doing.
I think you're so right. For peace of mind, just, you know, on the very, very unlikely event that anything does happen, sort of knowing you're covered and you've got someone to turn to. Because presumably these insurers, you know, also would give advice on sort of how to, you know, how to deal with it, then I think it's definitely, it's definitely worth having that, because obviously as a small business you're not going to have a legal department or or anything like that. So I think you're right. For however much it costs a year, I think it's definitely definitely worth it. And so you mentioned selling in markets. Is that something you're doing in the run-up to Christmas, or is that part of your sort of sales strategy year-round?
It's part of my sales strategy, really. I started doing some targeting more of sort of local areas, because I found that a lot of people sort of around where I am are really supportive, and they were, you know, they were coming along to markets I was doing, and they were becoming sort of repeat buyers. And I had a Christmas market locally last year, and I think because it's a regular market, people were coming back all the time, and they wanted to support people in their community. So, and I was like, oh, okay, this is an untapped sort. So it was great. So I just decided to kind of go with that, really. So I've done a couple of pop-ups locally, and and I definitely want to do sort of more sort of markets this year, like Christmas markets. I tried doing a really big one, a really big expensive one last year. I didn't make that many sales. And then I went to a smaller one expecting I wasn't going to make that many sales, and I sold out in an hour. So yeah, it's been interesting. It's taught me now that the smaller, more local markets are the places where my products sell well. And I have, you know, where these markets are, there are more affluent areas, should we say. So I do get people, you know, wanting to buy more and spend more money, which, you know, and plus they've been really supportive of my business as well, which is fantastic.
That's really lovely.
Yeah, and they're repeat buyers now as well, which is really, really nice. So yeah, very thankful.
That is really nice. And it's nice to know what works. And obviously it's not great when something doesn't work, but I think it's good at least you can say, okay, well, I tried that and actually that didn't work for me. So put that to one side and concentrate on what does work. And it's really lovely to have the local support as well. I hear this a lot, and I can definitely relate to that. So I love buying from local businesses or people I know or a friend of a friend. It's just I definitely think there is a more of a drive for that, isn't there, to support local and to support the smaller businesses.
And it's in-person selling as well. You know, I went along to a women's group the other week, and people can try the products, you know, which they can't do that much of now online. You know, I brought testers along, people were trying on the serum, they were trying on the balms and the oils, they could smell it, they could feel it, they could feel the texture. And, you know, they were buying it because of that, because they're like, oh, it feels really nice on my skin, it smells really nice, or I'm just going to take it away and make sure I'm not having a reaction. Oh no, actually, it's been really nice, I'll come back and buy that. So I think there's a lot to say for in-person selling, and actually people being able to touch and feel and you know, a product as well. It just, I think, we're not used to that as much now, that makes a difference as well.
I agree. I was talking to somebody about that yesterday, that I feel like now that we can go out or get again, and I know we have been able to for a while, I think there definitely is more of a drive for people want to buy things in person. And actually, I mean, there's always been that, it's always been nice to be able to look at things and feel them and everything else, but I think after not being able to do so for so long, it kind of, I think you almost appreciate it a bit more as well.
Definitely,
that you can actually go in. And I think as well for product, homemade products, there's something really nice about meeting the person behind the product. Well, whether it's homemade or whether it's a small business, I think just meeting the person behind the business does make a huge difference as well.
Absolutely.
Because you know your product.
You can ask that person questions, you can talk to them about the brand, you can talk to them about the product. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot to be said for that. It does make a huge difference.
Yeah, definitely.
So I have one final question, if that's okay, Dahlia. Which is, what is your number one piece of advice for other product creators? What would you want someone to take away from today? And this might be specific to the cosmetics industry, or it might not be. Your choice.
Oh God, just one. Oh my goodness. I would say be prepared for the time it takes. I think sometimes people assume they can make something, they can get out on the market straight away. It can take years, it can take months. You know, I remember your last interview you had, and then you know, the lady there saying how long it took. And you know, you will go through so many samples, you'll go through so many things that go wrong, you'll go through a lot of money and a lot of time, and you have to be prepared to just be patient. I'm not the world's most patient person, so I've had to really learn to go, okay, to take a step back and just, you know, understand that this is going to take a long time to do. So you have to be prepared for that. It's not going to go out onto the market like that tomorrow. You're probably going to be there for a year, maybe a couple of years of doing your research and development of that product. So you have to be, you know, prepared for that, I think, is the most important thing.
I think that's so helpful, thank you, because yeah. I think even if you are the most patient person, it can still get really disheartening, you know, you feel like, will I ever get there, and everyone else is doing this quicker. But I mean, that isn't the case, because of course the first time we, unless it's someone we know personally, often the first time we have a product is when it first goes on sale, when it's ready to launch, and that could be, as you say, that could be a couple of years from when that original idea came about. So thank you for being so honest about that, because I think you're right that, you know, you don't always fully appreciate how long these things can take. And it's like a string as well, isn't it? So what takes one person a year might take somebody else 2 years for all kinds of reasons. And also there'll be some who manage to do it quicker. But yeah, I think it takes as long as it takes, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. You have to be prepared for that.
Well, thank you so much for that. That's excellent advice. And thank you so much for all that you shared, because I know I asked you a lot of questions and so a lot of them you weren't prepared for. I didn't realise how interested I was going to get in the regulations. But I just think, because you were so open talking about it, I think it's just such, you know, valuable information for people to have if they're considering a cosmetic or anything topical, I guess. It's really worth knowing. So thank you so much for sharing.
No, thank you for having me. It's been really nice. And I always like talking about sort of the research and development and the compliance thing of it all. So, thank you for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you so much for listening right to the end of this episode. Do remember that you can get the full back catalogue and lots of free resources on my website, vickyweinberg.com. Please do remember to rate and review this episode if you've enjoyed it, and also share it with a friend who you think might find it useful. Thank you again and see you next week. Hi, this is just a little note. So if you've enjoyed this episode, or indeed any of the episodes, and you would like to, I don't know, buy me a coffee or something, you can actually now leave tips. So there's a link to how to do this in the show note. Of course, do not feel obliged to do this. This is a free podcast. This will always be a free podcast. But as I say, if you want to buy me a coffee, you can do that via the link in the show notes.